Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Mona, Rebecca, I know we've been saying how busy it's been lately, but the last few weeks have been an order of magnitude different, hasn't it?
Absolutely, Mark. It's been a marathon session.
Yes, I don't think Mona and I and the entire office had any sleep in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, seriously, we probably did 6 months of work in 3 weeks.
Yeah, you were telling me the other day you pulled a few all-nighters. Whew.
We did. But, you know, if we were to analyze, because we have had previous deadlines, this has to be one of the worst deadlines. A, because we knew that it was a real deadline. Mm-hmm. Other than perhaps the 2015 deadline, Rebecca, do you think?
Yeah, I think the 2015 September deadline and then the December 2016, that was also a pretty good rush as well. But this, like you said, takes the icing off the cake.
So this has been the tsunami building up the last 3 years.
Right. But it wasn't so much a volume of cases. We did have a lot of cases we had to file. But it was, I think, the quality of the filings because so many people were not ready. And then they rushed it. And there were too many sources. Documentation was bad. And this was one of the first deadlines we did without China, or very few from China, I should say. And that made a huge difference because previously, whenever we've had a deadline and China has been involved, that meant that we had agents involved. And the agents really did a lot of the legwork for us.
Yes. And this time, too, I agree with we had a lot of Indian H-1B folks who were trying to gather all their sources at the last minute. So with no third party helping with gathering or explaining the sources to investors, we had to get all that done as well.
Yeah, Rebecca had a client sending her 111 document at, 2 a.m. the night before? In fact, 7 a.m., 7 p.m. when we had to file by 7:30. It was that bad.
Yes, but luckily enough, we did it. We got it, all the cases out. We filed with all the G28s, I-526. So we commend ourselves on that part.
we had to literally run to the post office 5 minutes before they closed. It was a comic act, really.
Yeah, and the rush doesn't stop because we're sitting down to record this, and this episode is going to drop within 24 hours. So if you're subscribed to this feed and grabbing this episode the moment it drops, we just recorded it less than a day ago. So all this frazzledness is still fresh on all of us.
Well, we have a reason to do that, Mark. There's lots happening, and we are getting text after text and call after call from people who are really confused as to what's going on. There are a number of blog pieces out there and people have been trying to explain. I know Suzanne's blog has been out there. It's one of the best blogs, I think. I have to commend you, Suzanne, if you're listening. But we really feel that there has to be a little bit of an explanation required. And of course, we have breaking news.
Mona, I know you cannot wait to give everyone what the breaking news is. But maybe we should go ahead and explain what all this confusion has been between the extension with the continuing resolution versus USCIS's regulations.
Yes, I think that's a good idea. I think people should understand that here we are, the beginning of December 2019, and at this point, the current EB-5 Regional Center program has been extended by continuing resolution until December 20th, 2019. However, on July 24th of this year, USCIS published new regulations that became effective November 21st, 2019, and unless modified by legislation or blocked by litigation, this is the current status of the EB-5 program, i.e. that we are at 900,000 and the TEA designation is now in the hands of USCIS.
Yeah. So what I think there was a lot of confusion on is that, you know, we heard so many rumors, Mark, that was going around, especially in India. The Times of India were quoting things that even after the continuing resolution came out that, oh, the EB-5 program, yes, it was extended through December 20th, but it didn't include any language that superseded the regulations by USCIS or extending the $500,000 investment amount. On November 21st, the USCIS regulations did go into effect, as Mona stated earlier.
Well, the rumors were out there that the regulations were going to be suspended. That was because there was a few requests from the industry to Senator Mitch McConnell's office to basically to suspend the regulations, because the regulations themselves, once they're in place, they can't be stopped.
So yes, as of now, the regulations are in effect and the program is continuing through December 20th. But Mona, let's talk about now this, you know, juicy gossip that you have after the continuing resolution.
Yes, the juicy gossip that everybody was expecting to happen prior to the 21st of November, but it couldn't happen prior to the 21st of November. And that is, drum roll, yes, we have litigation.
Yeah, Mona, you've been hinting at possible litigation ever since these new regulations were announced. You said the regulation is going to do this unless litigation comes about. It was almost like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge over the microphone. And I'm sure the person listening has heard it as well in the past episodes. So is that because of this rumor?
Yes. Well, litigation wasn't so apparent, actually, because it looked like there really wasn't much room for litigation, because as we have discussed in the past, USCIS really did follow by the book. So we were really pleasantly surprised when we actually read the complaint, which we were expecting. We had to wait until the regulations had been implemented before the litigation could be filed, because you actually have to have some damages and everything happening. And it was Florida EB-5 Investments, which is a regional center down in Florida, who are the plaintiffs in this matter. The law firm who have taken this is GT, Greenberg Traurig. And the lawsuit was filed, I believe, Rebecca, November 26 in the D.C. court, Washington, D.C. So the actual complaint attempts to negate the effectiveness of the regs based upon multiple grounds. And very, very interestingly, it really includes the concept that, you know, USCIS is in effect legislating and not using proper standards in order to create the new regulations, since there is an economic information available. And the economic information available would show that the regs as they are would have a significant negative effect on the EB-5 industry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm going to just chime in here, Mona, if anyone wants a reminder or if anyone wants a thorough analysis of this. Jeff Carr, we've had on before, and we did a podcast detailing the analysis, and it's called The Economic Impact of the EB-5 Regional Center Program. That was aired back in April of 2019, April 3rd to be specific. Everyone, please listen to it. It can be found on our website, and to be even more specific, episode number 75.
In addition to that, the lawsuit also points out that there is a general lack of clarity in the final rule, which is incredibly problematic. The issue is that the regs do not really go for any particular program. Like currently, or rather prior to November 21, we had three economic programs we would use: the Redyne, the RIMS-2, and IMPLAN. At this point, DHS will not advise to use any one particular methodology. They recognize that there are benefits to limiting unemployment statistics to any single data set, but they will not provide one specific set of data or even any recommended data, which is really burdensome, because the burden is now on the petitioner to provide DHS the evidence. But the biggest problem of all is that DHS could actually wait until adjudication before they even sort of adjudicate the TEA. And that's got huge implications, Rebecca.
Yeah, I mean, if USCIS were to wait till they adjudicate the cases, we're talking about 2 to 4 years. And there is no project that can wait 2 to 4 years to figure out whether or not it's in a TEA area. So can you just imagine, Mona, Mark, imagine these investors who are putting all this money and developers putting all their money and time into this to find out years later that the project may not be in a TEA?
Right. With the time we spend on documentation, and all the analysis, either the investor may not have the money or the capital stack gets all skewed. There are just so many implications.
See a lot more litigation later.
Oh yeah, I agree. And that looking at all of that really makes you feel that, yes, they really got it right in this complaint, because the complaint does state that DHS or USCIS exceeded their expertise. They violated the 10th Amendment, amongst others. And it just really, to me, it feels that they do have strong grounds.
I agree. For me, I don't know where USCIS has the experience and or expertise to come out and say that this area is a targeted employment area. I mean, I feel like it should have been left with the states.
Yeah, that's very interesting, because so many people who do listen to this podcast are overseas, and there aren't many jurisdictions where you have the idea of sovereign rights of states as well as federal, the oversight of the federal rule. And this is it, within the complaint. Again, they do mention that the new regulations take away from the sovereign rights.
Yes.
Because at the end of the day, I do believe that states and localities are in the best position to decide whether something is a TEA or not. And at this rate, also bear in mind that DHS is usually politically motivated. I mean, currently, it's all the people who are appointed there are Trump appointees. They really would decide where a project would go. And if suddenly they decided that a rural area in the middle of North Carolina was now not a TEA, it would be their decision. And there would be no right to appeal against it. So yeah, I do think that legislation was needed. It's there. It's come about. And good. Let's see what the outcome is. But what happens, Rebecca, to someone who wants to file a petition today? Because do you think we will get a TRO? Something suspending the current regulations?
Wait, Rebecca, before you answer that, Mona, what's a TRO?
It's a temporary restraining order. It's basically enjoining the implementation of the regulations so that it would be as if the regulations never came into effect. And we are back at the old TEA definition and the 500,000 limit. Ooh. Until something happens. Exactly. Yes, wow. Exactly. It would give people an opportunity to quickly file if they had not filed in time. We do not want, if anybody's listening out there on the circuit court, we do not want a 30-day suspension over Christmas. Please, please have mercy on us lawyers.
Yeah, you know, it's very hard to say whether or not they would do that. I mean, we will find out more information later this week. So as there's a lot of uncertainty at this point as to whether or not the TRO would come in, we would advise Mona Winshugri, our clients or any investors out there, to go ahead and follow the USCIS regulations until there's further action taken.
Oh, definitely. One should not follow this as if it was going to happen until it actually does happen, because you have to follow the law as it is today. And the law as it is on this particular day is that the regulations are in effect. So unless something changes, and there are things out there which may make a difference, we still have to follow the fact that it's 900,000 and the TEA is up to USCIS or /DHS. So if somebody wants to file a petition tomorrow, or if somebody wants to redo their documents, we would advise to wait just for a little while. But if they really, really need to, if they're, for example, a child is aging out or something, I think that from all of our discussions with all of the economists, there is a safe way of filing whereby you do cover TEA analysis under the current rules and using also the opportunity zone rules.
And Mona, you're not saying people should wait just so you can get a night's sleep, right?
No, it's for their benefit. Like we said, unless it's very urgent, like Mona said, with age-out children, it can be done. And we're going to probably have more information on that with other guest speakers coming soon.
Yeah, but there is an exception for rural programs. So if there's a project in a rural area, there is a revised definition of the rural qualification, but it really is not a huge difference from the previous one. I wouldn't say there was a material change to the existing law as per se. So that's what your one safe area right now. If you really, really, really need to file, well, there is a look for a rural project.
Yeah. But that's where the other, you know, argument could be that, you know, now that everyone's in a rush to file under that, will everyone be conducting due diligence on these projects and making sure that they're filing where they would like to file?
Yeah, well, we discussed this in a previous podcast as well, because rural projects just do not have the same viability. But at the same time, their costs aren't as high as some of the city urban projects. And that we've started to see through RFEs, as well as being so beyond projects that we can now see projects at the other end, and we can see where all the expenses are coming from.
Yeah, we could probably have a whole episode on that discussion. But I think, Mona, we want to talk about how many times this program has been extended. 17 times,
well,
right?
Well, that's legislation. So I just want to make a distinction that what we just spoke about were the regulations. And the regulations, just so that we're all on the same page, have a fancy name, and they're called the EB5 Immigrant Investor Program Modernization. Not to be confused with the legislation which has been introduced recently.
Yes. Yeah, so within the legislation, though, Mona, there have been, you know, a few bills that have come out from several senators.
Right. Well, Mark, Rebecca, really, to make matters more complicated than they already are for anybody listening, a Senate bill was introduced on November 5th, 2019 by Senator Grounds, Graham and Cornyn. Again, this was expected. And a lot of us did write about it, but, you know, we were so busy with the deadline that I think people might have missed it. This particular bill is called, well, it's called the Immigration Investor Program Relief Act, but we nickname it the Relief Act, which is much less of a mouthful than the EB5 Immigrant Investor Program Modernization Rules. So there's quite a few things which are really good in this particular act, and this is the in this particular bill, rather. And this was the bill that was pushed forward by IIUSA, EB5 Coalition, and others. It gives a reauthorization of the program. It doesn't give a permanent reauthorization, but at least until September 30th, 2025. Most importantly, it redefines TEAs to include rural areas, distressed areas, and otherwise designated as opportunity zones, designated areas, as per the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which is last year's tax act, which was brought in by Trump. It creates a minimum investment of $1 million for a TEA petition rather than $900,000, but $1,100,000 for a non-TEA petition. So that makes it a little different, whereas currently we are at $900,000 and $1.8 million. So we are at a double for a non-TEA, whereas the Act, the Relief Act, is only $100,000 more. The Relief Act also establishes 15% set aside for rural projects and a 15% set aside for urban distress, which is the opportunity zone designated areas. There's also a 90-day effective grace period from the enactment date with respect to a new I-526 petitions filed during the 90-day transition period, which is still 90 days of deadline, Rebecca, if it comes in. But there is a provision for expedited processing. There is a premium processing and improvement fees. Again, not sure how this is going to work, but within this bill, each investor would pay the Treasury of the United States an improvement fee, I love this word, the improvement fee of $50,000 in conjunction with the I-526 petition and the petition fees. So that's a huge jump. But hopefully that petition, that $50,000 fee will speed up the whole processing and not be a 2 to 4 year wait. Finally, in addition, there is a provision for backlog relief, whereby the Secretary of Homeland Security, in its discretion, may temporary parole into the U.S. people who are in backlog. And I think that really has been put in for the sake of the Vietnamese as well as the Chinese. There's, and of course, all the numerous integrity measures, which nobody ever had a problem with, have also been integrated.
Yes. And I believe also, Mona, it also mentioned there was going to be some relief, too, for those who have age-out children, because being stuck in those such a long backlog, hopefully the backlog clears. But in the view that it does not, hopefully they will just allow those who file under 21 to be able to keep going, even though there's, you know, 12-year backlog.
Yeah, because, Mark, it's getting ridiculous. If there's a 15 to 16-year backlog for a Chinese investor, what do they do? Do they put their child in at the age of 2 months or 6 months? It's crazy. But we went for the first time to having introduced minors as investors. And initially, the minors were like 16, 15. Then they became 14. Then they became 12. Now we have minors at 7 and 8. And then there's so many complications along with that, with guardians and how the paperwork has to be controlled. So I really feel that there has to be some kind of control on the backlog here.
I agree 100%. But this bill, the Relief Act, seems a lot better and more sustainable than what Grassley, Senators Grassley and Leahy came out with, right?
Absolutely. I think you have some choice words about Senators Grassley and Leahy's bill, although there are a few measures in there which are noteworthy.
Yes, yes. This bill was S2540, the EB5 Reform and Integrity Act. So we don't speak about that too much because it does not replace the TEA definition. And then it has so much restrictions, requirements, fees that could pretty much take it. You're taking out pretty much all the urban stakeholders. And then those who are in the distressed or urban and rural areas, the cost would be too much. But as Mona said, the good points about it is that there are a few good points, such as meeting the reasonable processing time goals for EB5 investor petitions. I think that we need, because 2 to 4 year waiting line is way too long, if those target goals could be changed for USCIS. So you could impose a rule, a fee rule, that allows them to adjudicate within a reasonable time. So that's one. Another is that although they do talk about a lot of fees, but hopefully they can delete this annual fee that they're talking about. Moni, you mentioned it earlier in the Relief Act as well.
The $50,000? The $50,000 is for the investor, whereas Leahy's bill brings in, I think it's a $20,000 annual fee for the regional center, which is a little different.
Yeah, but that would hurt the projects that are in the distressed areas.
Right, right.
This bill really, the Grassley and Leahy bill, really focuses on integrity measures. It may be a lot that is being put into that bill, but it can be a measure that I think will be good and make everyone happy on both sides.
I think we will see something come through. Perhaps it will be a mix of the two early next year. I can't see this now not being pushed through, not when we have such bipartisan support for EB5 going through. There has to be something. And hopefully, with some pressure relating to litigation, if we do get a TRO, then everything will be up in the air and Congress will be forced into doing something. Hopefully. So, Rebecca, adjudication is still painstakingly slow. I'm tired of writing to clients when they ask that, I'm sorry, nothing is happening. Nothing is happening on any project.
Yeah, I think we've seen one approval in the last few months. We have not seen anything come through.
We haven't seen total projects come through either.
No, not at all. And, you know, this 2 to 4 years adjudication timeline, it's just such a, it doesn't make sense. I mean, how can you have such a long, extensive timeline and then say 2 to 4 years?
Well, I do think that we had agreed on, when we mentioned on previous podcasts, that a lot of that was to prevent litigation.
I see litigation coming out to say that this is unreasonable.
Right. Rebecca, could you just explain this whole Chart B business? Because currently, we have a lot of listeners who do come from India, who are Indian born. And India is currently in backlog, and yet we can apply for their green cards because Chart B is open. How is that working?
Well, so what it is that I know we've spoken about this on several other podcasts as well, but just to update everyone, is that USCIS has now opened Chart B, and they have done so since October, for those who can apply for adjustment of status. So this allows you to go ahead and file the adjustment, the I-45, the adjustment of status application, along with your I-765, which is your employment authorization form, and your travel document. So what happens is that you can go into line. If your priority date on Chart B is current, you can go ahead and join the line for your green card, and you will receive your EAD, your employment authorization, and your travel permit within 90 days. So it allows you to keep that and continue waiting in line until your priority date in Chart A, the final action date, becomes current to get the actual green card.
Right. And also, other good news, well, it's a little bit of something, is that last week of November, the U.S. Department of State published their annual numerical limits. And there is an increase of visas going to EB5. I believe that rather than 10,000 visas, there's 11,101 immigrant visas, which are going to be allotted in fiscal year 2020, which will increase each country, I believe, by 10%, making it 778.
Yes, that is it. So luckily enough, we have a few extra visas available for the EB5 program.
Well, we shouldn't complain. 10% is still 10% extra.
But a lot of that is probably going to go to China.
Is that how it works? So would it not be divided across the board?
Well, it would. It will be. It's additional visas. It will go 778 to each, but then any other additional after that would probably, it will go to China.
Okay. Well, I think that's necessary. That's needed, rather.
Yeah. Well, yes, their backlog is extensive.
Well, Mona and Rebecca, there is a lot going on, and I know there's even more going on in the near future. I know that we've got another interview with someone on something that's happening in a couple of days. That's about all I can say right now, because a lot really depends on what happens in this next 48 hours to shape that interview. There's just so much going on. And thank you for taking the time to give us the updates on the pulse of EB5 after the regulations have gone into effect.
Yes, Mark, you've actually seen who we have on our pending podcast coming forward. Mm-hmm. There is a lot happening, but the problem is right now is that there is uncertainty. And this is not good for U.S. businesses, as well as just the EB5 program in general. People don't know how to move forward. There are projects which need money, have got investors, and they really are reaching out to us and asking, what do we do? So at this point, we can just ask you all just to hold on. Hopefully, we will have more answers very, very shortly.
I'm pretty confident we will have more answers shortly. So be sure to subscribe and stay tuned to EB5 Investment Voice. We're going to be dropping some more answers and more information and some very recent updates next week.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.